Hello, and welcome to the Common Geeking Program. It's like a book club, but even nerdier. Each episode, we select a topic that four people will discuss from their own geeky perspectives. Joining me this episode are...
Hello, my name is Colin. I'm joining you this episode. I'm going to be talking about the... Oh, God, I feel so fucking weird saying this out loud now. I'm going to be talking about Bionicle, the Lego toy line that launched in 2001, and its storyline.
Nice.
Yes.
Mask of Light is life.
Hi, I'm Laura. I am joining you this week, and we'll be talking about the book Sabriel by Garth Nix.
Sabriel?
Sabriel.
You took a really long time to say that three-syllable name.
I had a moment of not 100% sure if I was talking about Sabriel or Lyriel.
This bodes very well for your section of the podcast.
Well, the good news is that they're the same book, and if we're talking about world building, it doesn't really matter which one I talk about. So.
All right, that's fair. Well,
the answer is Sabriel.
Spoiler on the theme of the episode, but whatever.
Ah, shit. Whatever.
Hi, I'm Edward Ryan, and today I'm going to be talking about Fallout, the video game series.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because there was an earlier episode, I think it was episode 13, where Eddie was like, I was having a really hard time thinking of what to talk about, so I almost just picked Fallout, didn't talk about anything, just talk about Fallout the whole time. And I'm kind of wondering, are we just in for an entire section of Eddie bullshitting his way through his favorite video game and nothing of actual substance?
Fallout is not my favorite video game, but maybe.
That's up there.
I will say...
It's a book club! We're supposed to have meaningful conversations. I don't want to hear about Pit Boys.
I will say I may have had a tough time picking a domain.
Well, full disclosure, I picked mine about 8 minutes ago, so.
Full disclosure, I picked mine about halfway through my introduction.
And I picked mine 3 days ago and will probably do the worst job representing.
And I'm your host, Name. For this episode topic, I've selected topic and theme.
Fuck you. Fill in the blanks. It's the easiest Mad Lib ever. Just fill in the blanks. The one time someone reads the guide, they fuck it up.
I'm fucking with you guys. Anyways.
I heard it.
I can't fucking deal with this right now.
Sorry.
And I'm your host, Kaimal Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer. For this episode's topic, I've selected Tales of Alethrian, and the theme is world building. Alright, so Tales of Alethrian is a series that takes place in this fantasy world, you know, that's inspired by D&D and other kinds of adventure tales. It started as a student film called The Reward. The Reward, like, became super successful, and they decide to expand on the Reward, later releasing a short called The First Hero.
Do you want to start just by mentioning the ones you had us watch and say, like, these are the ones we're focusing on?
Yeah, so I had you guys watch The Reward, The First Hero, Traveling Deities, all three parts, and Wilhelm's Curse, part one. Interesting fact, this happened after I assigned you guys the reading, but part two came out.
Oh, it's still happening?
Yeah, it's still happening.
Oh, no way.
I started watching it.
Oh, was I not supposed to watch that?
If you watched it, Eddie, that's extra... That's bonus credit for you.
Yeah, nice. I didn't assign that because it wasn't out at the time. Anyways, I also had them watch some character introductions just so they know that there's, like, more to this series.
I may have forgotten to watch that one.
The character introductions?
There's 11 videos. You forgot to watch 11 of the 15 videos, Colin?
What? No!
It's not a big deal. They just introduced some characters.
But Eddie phrased it in a way that makes me feel so bad.
I did that on purpose.
So long as you watch the animated shorts, it's good.
Okay, I did. I watched all the shorts. And they were fun. What were they about?
All right, so let's start with The Reward. The Reward, you know, starts out with, like, these two guys. Oh, wait, and one more thing I wanted to mention before we actually start describing these. These shorts are, for the most part, silent.
Not silent. There's no dialogue. There's a lot of sound. The sound is super important.
Yeah, silent is not the word I was looking for. There's no dialogue. The Zero, like, drops the map, and two guys take the map. They accidentally end up splitting the map in two, so they gotta work together, and if they want to get the treasure that's at the end, the reward, as it may be.
And because there's no dialogue, the whole video is essentially, like, a montage of montages of how they become friends across finding this map. I was, like, so frustrated at the fact that it was a montage, but I'm like, well, there are no words, so I guess this is probably the best way to do it, and it worked pretty well, so I'll give them that.
It was very popular, too. Yeah, midway through, they end up in a city, they have their falling out because of, their names are Wilhelm and, what's the other guy? Vito. Yeah, Wilhelm and Vito.
I would have known that if I'd watched 11 of the 15 videos.
Yeah, Wilhelm loses his fingers, they have falling out, but soon after, they get back together, they continue to embark on their epic quest. When they finally get to the end, they find that there's no treasure, just a mirror. And they're like, what the hell? But then they look in the mirror and realize, wait, on this journey,
there was a lot of fucking treasure.
True.
I'm getting to that. They realize
the true treasure was friendship.
Yes. And that was the reward, the journey, not the destination.
Does that make this like the least rewarding podcast of all times?
Okay, so next short is The Last Hero, right?
Wasn't it The First Hero?
Or not the...
The First Hero.
I like how put together we all are right now. The First Hero was, I think, the most compelling.
Yeah, that one took a while to make. Like, it was delayed quite a few times.
It was like 22 minutes, and this is all, like, hand-drawn and very...
Yeah, it is. It is super impressive.
Very charming.
Yeah.
Art style, very anime animation style, but the art style I think is very charming.
Yeah, I really liked the art style. It's very beautiful.
I know, right? Like I really admire these guys and like admire what they've accomplished, you know, because
even if you don't like the dialogueless storytelling or the vaguity of it, it's worth looking at for sure.
So The First Hero, it's about this guy named Alethrian, aka the guy the entire series is named after.
That's the guy? That's Alethrian? These are his tales? What? I thought his name was like Dave or some shit. All right.
You would have known that if you watched the 11 extra videos.
So we got Alethrian. He's like this great hero, right? He meets this woman who, you know, has this adventurous spirit. They hit it off pretty well, and like they have a pretty nice relationship going on.
It was so cute. They also showed her titties, which I was not expecting, and I was at work when I was watching it, so.
I wouldn't think about that. Sorry, I didn't warn you guys, I guess.
How could you not? Anyway, so yeah. they date a while, and then he starts to like remember what it was. They draw the map that you see in the other video, but they start to drift apart because he's like all reminiscent about being a hero and making boku bucks. Then they start to get mad because she's like, I just want to be us. And he's like, I want money, bitch. And, you know, obviously without the words, but I want money, bitch is written all over the animation. They broke up because he was obsessed with money. And then he went up to that weird Pantheon tower. He murdered all the gods and became what? Like, then he fought, like, the evil within himself.
Yeah, that was Alethrian's greed. He comes to realize, wait. I'm being really fucking evil right now. He fights his own greed. He almost loses, but, you know, he remembers his love with,
What was her name? I don't know her name.
Amaratha?
Alethrian and Amaratha?
Something like that, yeah.
Can you imagine the wedding invitations for that shit? The calligraphist would have a heart attack.
Do you, Alethrian, take Amaratha as your lovely wedded love?
I already fucking forgot her name. Thank you. Jesus Christ. But no, yeah, that whole short...
It's Amarath.
Amarath?
Amarath. Okay.
He realizes that his quest for gold really wasn't worth it and that he really had something worthwhile with Amarath. With the last bit of his strength, he seals his own greed in a chest and, you know, he dies, realizing that this might be the only good thing he's ever done. And that brings us to Traveling Deities, which you guys were talking about. It's told from
It was so short, but like I think I may have enjoyed these the most.
I'd say it's a result of like them getting more experience in storytelling. So
it was because it was so effective because basically this just followed Amarath while Alethrian, like after the breakup, while Alethrian was killing the gods. Right? That's I'm not wrong in that.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So you're following that as she...
Well, because so what happened? The gods sent out these like messengers or something or like watchers, mm-hmm. and one of them ended up with Amarath coincidentally, I think.
Yeah. Also, It took the form of adorable fluffy bird. Oh. And it's a really cute little bird with a lot of personality. And then
Alethrion murders the gods, and the little god messenger thing, like, dies because god power is gone.
Which sucked, because they were, like, best buds at this point, and she just watched. They were having a picnic, and he just keeled over and fucking died. In the middle of the picnic.
Which was super sad for me.
I thought it was like a rabid from Rayman, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think so too. They were really well done.
And then she makes her way back. She gets back to that pantheon of the gods, and old ass Alethrion is just chilling there, still next to his chest with the dead greed in it. Very quickly.
Yeah, I'm assuming in the mirror world, time probably passes differently. Like, have you ever seen Power Rangers Season 2?
Nope.
We don't have time for that.
When Zed
right
comes
now,
back and
anyway.
He puts Rita up.
We don't. Anyway. Yeah, Chowder's right, Eddie.
Anyways, yeah, she has a vision of, like, the various characters and, like, then standing up against Alethrion's greed. And she has this vague sort of goal that isn't expanded upon yet. Next up, we have Wilhelm's Curse. It opens with a narration basically explaining...
Wilhelm's a vampire.
Wilhelm had become a vampire.
This is something that, like, happens during these sort of animatics called Choose Their Fates, where Patreons and Kickstarters got to, like, decide the direction of these characters' stories. And I didn't have you guys watch that because it would have taken a really long time. But yeah, Wilhelm's a vampire. You know, they're fighting each other. Or no, not fighting each other. They're fighting a Hydra. Yeah, they're fighting a Hydra. And in the fight, Wilhelm accidentally loses the amulet that, you know, is letting him walk around during the day. So Hydra's defeated, but, like...
But he's burning in the sun, and fucking Vito goes off to mack on this hot chick.
True.
That's, like, the whole short.
He's like, ooh.
As he's just burning in the sun. Dude, did you look at the comments for this on YouTube?
No, what were they?
The top comment is like, yeah, I know the sun's roasting my friend, but, you know, I gotta holla back. And I'm just like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Actually, this is like further expanded upon in part two.
Yeah. Well, no, let's do that in the discussion, because that's not really part of the topic.
Okay. Yeah, so I want to talk about Tales of Alethrion, because I feel like they've managed to, like, create this world that feels interesting and feels lived in and feels like it's worth understanding and learning about, despite the fact that they have the limitation of having no dialogue and, like, being a web animation, meaning long waits between, like, each part. So yeah, they didn't have much time, they didn't have much money, and yet they succeeded in creating this worthwhile world. So let's move on to each of the representatives' domains, starting with Colin. You're up.
Oh, you were relying on me to do the work that I thought you were going to do. That's okay. So, once again, my name is Colin, and joining you this week, I am trying to find meaningful connections between the topic of Tales of Alethrion and my domain, haphazardly and slapdashedly chosen, Bionicle. So, Bionicle was a toy line that LEGO... Thank you. Bionicle was a toy line that LEGO launched in 2001 because the only toys they had with stories were Star Wars, and they sold like crazy, but they didn't make enough money off the licensing fees. So they were like, we need more money. Let's make an original story with no licensing fees. And Bionicles fucking took off, man. That shit was popular.
I remember that in, like, elementary school. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of the kids, like, were super into it.
You would bring them in. Basically, LEGO Technic pieces, instead of clicking together like bricks, they were like these holes and axles and gears and things that would plug together perpendicularly. And they would have these ball and socket joints.
It was amazing.
And you could, like, they were like action figures that you could build and take apart in the LEGO sort of way. Full disclosure, I had an entire dresser full straight drawers full of Bionicle pieces over the years. I have built so much shit, it's ridiculous. I started work on a full-size person once. I got a fully articulate left arm, chest, head, and neck, and then I stopped. I also have some of the Bionicles that launched in 2015 and 16, so I'm still fucking there.
Fucking nerd.
In case it wasn't clear, Colin is indeed the biggest nerd on the podcast.
I fucking love it. So the reason I want to talk about Bionicle is even though they were just these toys, they did have a story. And I wanted, the reason Tales of Alethreon made me think of it is Tales of Alethreon told the story in sort of this parsed out way where I wasn't really clear on the timeline of these things, but that didn't really hamper my understanding of it. Bionicle was definitely like sort of a mixed medium sort of thing. You had the toys, you had some stuff on the back of the canisters that they came in. And each year they would release like six heroes, six villains, and like one or two or three big sets. And you could kind of see how they all fit together. But they also came with these little comics, and they had these little books you could read, and they had all these different little things. So the story was, you had these six main guys. These were the first toys that came out. Six Toa, T-O-A. And they would defend the island of Mata Nui.
Mm-hmm.
And the Matoran villagers all over the place are in trouble because this guy named Makuta is going to kill him.
The earth shudders.
So there's all these weird names that you kind of don't have to know about. What was kind of enjoyable about this world is you got to build your character. You got to build your person. And if you want to change him up, you could do that. And it would connect you with him. So then I was like, you know what? I got Pohatu. That was the first one I ever got. The rock guy. He had the mask of speed. And I was like, he was the best. What was interesting was the fact that I had this toy. And like my siblings had different ones. And my friends had different ones. I got invested in what my toy was at like 7 years old. I was like, who is Pohatu?
Yo.
I learned that of the Toa, he defends a lot of the rock villagers, the people who live in the mountains. And it was really interesting. It still is really interesting to think about a toy line that gets you invested, maybe not from the way that like Transformers will make you say, ooh, I've seen this guy in a TV show. This was backwards. The toys, like, well, I guess it's not backwards from Transformers, but it was a little less just like, oh, I want Optimus Prime. Everybody knows Optimus Prime. It was like, I got Pohatu. And this is where I start. So the story basically is you have those six heroes need to find a villager.
Epic.
To become a seventh Toa who has the Mask of Light to fight the Mask of Darkness. And there's a movie about it. So It's a very like good versus evil thing. But if you buy all the little toys, each toy comes with a comic saying, this is what the villagers do. This is what the Toa do. This is what the bad guys do. And depending on how much you like the toys, you understand more of the world by putting it all together that way. Which is very emblematic of Legos as a whole. Super interesting. There's other shit you can watch and read.
So real quick,
and
before.
That's why I picked Bionicle. Yeah.
Are the Bionicles robots? Like, I never understood that as a kid.
They, I believe, are biomechanical in nature. So they aren't, like, built by people. You can see comics of them, like, assembling themselves from parts and things like that. But they are sentient sort of organisms. They're mechanical. That's actually what Bionicle partially stood for. It's bio. And then biological chronicle. It had been Lego Technic, biological technical chronicle. It was a weird thing.
Can I just say real quick? I also had Pohatu, the rock guy.
Fucking dope!
But I replaced one of his arms with the arm of the fire guy, and I pretended that he could shoot fireballs.
It's all about the imagination.
That was the cool thing about Bionicle, is you'd build them, and then you'd be like, ooh, which parts look the best? And you'd build, like, the ultimate Bionicle.
And when you get, like, so yeah, that's why I want to talk about Bionicle. I think it was a really unique approach to world building, given how successful it was at first, worked better than it should have.
All right, so we'll move on from Colin and Bionicles to Laura. That's your cue.
Me! Laura is me. I am Laura.
She's back again, kids.
I am definitely not a robot.
Probably.
And I'm talking about Sabriel. Yeah, probably not a robot. Anyway, so I chose Sabriel because, like a lot of fantasy novels, it created its own world that differs from ours in a lot of ways. And one thing that I really liked about the Tales of Alethreon is that it felt earthish at first, like it felt like ancient Greece to me a lot, and it had a lot of similar themes to their tales. So it felt like the world, but then all of a sudden there was magic involved, and then you could see the gods, and then there were these little creatures that didn't exist in our world. So it kind of built out the world around this basis that felt very earth and then kind of went its own way. And I think that that's something that Sabriel does as well. And I'm starting the discussion. So Sabriel is a book by Garth Nix about a teenage girl who at the very beginning of the book dies when she is first born and her father.
So is the book just like one chapter long?
No, it's like 30 words. Like it's 30 words.
So it's a short story.
So it's a short story.
Oh, so
about
it's
a girl
no,
who
it's
dies.
A poem actually.
So are the rest of the pages just like blank or
yeah it's like so about the imagination thing like then you have all this space where you just write your own story.
Just imagine the whole fucking book.
Very postmodern.
You just do the whole book. No, so part of the whole world building is that Sabriel dies as she's being born, and her father pulls out these bells and starts ringing these bells and goes into the Land of Death, which is this epic river that has different tiers, and each tier has its own pitfall. And by tier, I mean level. And he brings her back. So he brings her back from the dead because he's a necromancer, and he has the power to move the dead between realms, which is really awesome. And
necromancy is frowned upon.
It is not great, and there are evil necromancers in the world, but not it's called the Abhorsen, and I apologize for the pronunciation on that. It's one of those words that I have never said out loud. I've just read it 100 times.
Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, where we're all prepared.
Hooray! The Abhorsen is a title of somebody that works for good and tries to keep the forces of death in the world of death instead of coming out into the real world and trying to kill people.
Lol.
It's cool.
It's a living.
It's a death thing. So,
but is it? Is it?
The cool thing that I really liked about the world that Garth Nix built is that there are two sections. So there's I'm going to have to pull up Wikipedia here. I'm so sorry, guys.
I have had Wikipedia open this whole time.
Why do you have Wikipedia open?
Dude, listen. It's been 16 years, dude.
Yeah.
And I gave all my Bionicles to my nephew.
Why did you do that, Colin? I would have taken them.
Yeah.
Well, not the 2015 and 16 ones. Those are in my bedroom. Because I...
So there are two worlds that he builds in this one book, and one of them is called the Old Kingdom, which is, like, I was remembering it that way and was like, that can't possibly be right. It definitely has a name. It doesn't. It's just called the Old Kingdom. And the other side of this world, which is split by a wall, is called Ancelstier.
Want to say that again?
Again, that will be the first and last time I pronounced that. Nope.
I would have thought the New Kingdom, but okay.
That would have been way easier.
And yeah, that would just make sense.
And Ancelstier.
Alethrion, Amaratha, Ancelstier, Matanu. I'm not a fan of this episode.
Yeah, apparently having a new world means having the weirdest fucking names, huh?
Seriously.
The hardest things to pronounce. So Ancelstier is basically like England in like the 1800s or so. So there's some electricity. I believe they have guns, but it's not like a super advanced society. But it feels very much like, it feels like Earth. And it feels like Earth's history. And there is no magic on most of that side of the wall. What's really cool is that the wall splits it, and in the Old Kingdom, magic is everywhere. There's a lot of people who practice, and you can feel it. There's creatures, and then on...
Is magic just like Wi-Fi, and it has a lot of trouble with brick walls, so you need like a booster?
Yes, it totally is. And the summary that I was reading, just to refresh, there's something called a charter stone. So the magic that... Some of the magic that they use is called charter magic.
Uh-huh.
And these charter stones literally act like Wi-Fi spots.
Pulled
directly from a quote.
Oh my god.
On the internet.
There are airport expresses all over the fucking New Kingdom.
All over the place. They're all over the Old Kingdom.
Okay, so I'm sorry. Well, I didn't remember the name for New Kingdom anyway, so.
Would you like to try to pronounce Ancelstier? That's what I'm going with.
Ancelstier?
Sure.
How do I spell this? I want to look this up. I want to see what this actually is. How do I spell
this? Google Liriel or Sabriel and look it up.
Is the third book called Gabriel? Just wondering.
It's called Abhorsen, actually.
Ah!
Yeah. So this book series spends a lot of time discovering the worlds that they build around. So you meet creatures that are made out of lightness and power and darkness, and death is a place that you get to explore. And I just thought it was a really fun way to combine the feeling of Earth and things that we know, like, you know, the ancient Greek civilization, which is what I really felt from the beginning of Tales of Alethrion, and, you know, our England with electricity and cars and all that, and then have this magical side with creatures and powers and all sorts of fantastical bits and pieces. So that's why I chose it. I am going to apologize right now. I am literally falling asleep as I am sitting here.
Maybe we could get some sick audio of you snoring during the discussion, but actually it works
happen.
Out because you're actually like a minute under for what your time was going to be.
Cool.
All right, so let's move on to...
Hey, that's me. Hey, guys, I'm Eddie, or Edward Brian, Eddie, Ed. Anyway,
How many more steps do you want to take at your name?
None.
Is this really what I have to look forward to?
So I'm going to talk about today I brought as my domain, Fallout. It's a game series originally by someone, but now by Bethesda. It takes place in a post-apocalyptic future.
War never changes.
But let's go back a little bit into the past. So in the world of Fallout, is not the same as our world. After World War II, the timelines diverge. In Fallout, culture...
Oh, this is good for me to know, because I've not been able to figure out any of this shit, and you read all the books. This is great.
Alright, so let's in go. Fallout, well, it's terminals in Fallout. It's books in Elder Scrolls. Come on, man.
They're TV books. Shut up.
Anyway, in Fallout... Teach me things! In the world of Fallout, culture stayed around the way it was in the 50s, but technology became a lot more advanced a lot more quickly. Though not in the same way. Whereas in the real world, technology got really small, and we have, like, cell phones. In the Fallout world, technology got kind of bigger, and they have, like, huge supercomputers and robots. But anyway, so the future in the Fallout world is kind of like the future that was imagined in the 1950s, where, like, they had all the 50s aesthetic and stuff, and they were listening to, like, bebop and...
Bebop? Pretty sure bebop was the 60s, though.
I don't know.
No, not bebop. Like doo-wop. You got all this jazz... Yeah,
I don't know,
Cowboy
man.
Cowboy doo-wop, the hit anime.
Doo-wop. That's what I meant. I meant to say doo-wop. I'll say doo-wop, very monotone, and you can edit it in. Ready? Doo-wop. Anyway, in the Fallout universe, in 2077... Yeah, in 2077, there was a big old war between the U.S.
But the war never changed.
War never changes.
Between the U.S. and China. Between the U.S. and China, they're the two world superpowers. And China, they invade Alaska, and we're like, ain't none of that. So China, they invade Alaska, and the U.S. is like, hey, Canada, you want to help us take Alaska back? And Canada says no. So the U.S. takes over all of Canada. We take Alaska back from the Chinese, and it's like, yeah. And the way we do that is with these cool suits of armor called power armor. Take Alaska back. China, not too happy about that. Then there's this big old nuclear war. But luckily, we anticipated this. We were like, oh, there might be a nuclear war. So this company, Vault Tech, they built all these vaults or fallout shelters. And a bunch of people, relatively a very small number of people, but a bunch of people went into these vaults to escape the horrors of nuclear explosions and fallout.
Ah, that's the title. That's the title.
Anyway, some number of years later, like, I don't know, something like 2080, something like that. 2080 something, 2090 something, whatever. Fallout 1 starts, and you leave Vault 13 because your vault's water processing chip, the thing that runs the system that cleans your water, is broken, and you need to get a new one so that everyone in your vault doesn't die. So you leave the vault, and you find out that there's all these town civilizations and stuff that have kind of cropped up in the post-nuclear war America. You adventure through the wasteland, and, like, there's all these irradiated creatures, and there's irradiated people called ghouls.
I might be a ghoul, but I'm still all woman.
And there's a whole bunch of crazy stuff. And there's a whole bunch of games where you explore different regions of the United States at different times after the war. And it's, yeah, I'll talk more about it in, you know, regards to Tales of Alethreon in the discussion, but it's a really interesting way that they've built out this world, because it's kind of built upon an idea of the future that we had as a society in, like, the 50s, but if that future was also destroyed by nuclear bombs.
Alright, now let's move on to the discussion portion of the podcast, yeah.
This the meat and potatoes.
And knuckles.
Meat, potatoes, and knuckles. Laura, there's a game called Sonic 3 and Knuckles, and the last episode we recorded was about Sonic 3, and Devin said and Knuckles after fucking everything.
Hey, I'm caught up, I laughed, I get the joke. Okay. I'm with it. Ah.
Yay! Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay. As with any story, the artist faces some sort of limitation that they have to work around in some way. For example, Tales of Alethreon had to work around being without dialogue and being an animation. What kind of obstacle did your domain have to work around in order to make world building work? Laura wants to start, so yeah, Laura.
Hacks, bias.
Yes.
Rigged.
Colin, it's the double hands and the twinkle fingers that make it happen.
She literally raised her hand last.
I'm sorry. I wasn't like...
No, dude. It's okay. Looking it at super
the
Skype. Funny.
I was looking at the chronograph and her square was there, so...
You were looking at the pornographics?
My domain is a book, and books lack a visual aspect, obviously, so it's all about the imagination. So when you're trying to build...
What kind of books are you reading?
The non-picture books, the books for adults that are also kids.
There are non-picture books?
It's funny because a lot of the novels that I've talked about so far on this podcast are definitely young adult novels. So I'm like, the adult books that are for 10-year-olds, it's cool. Novels obviously lack a visual aspect, and when you're writing in fantasy and you're trying to explain a world where you can literally walk into death, and each of these layers of death has a specific aspect, like one of them swirls and one of them has a gentle glow trying to lure you in and explain. There's a character called Mogget who is a cat. He's a talking cat.
Speaking of cats.
That is trying to teach Podcat. Is trying to teach Sabriel how...
This is number two Podcat. Number one Podcat's on the floor.
To be in a porson, because he's like, I've been with your family forever and this is now your role. And to visually describe how a white cat with a collar becomes a giant free magic power beast.
That's my cat anyways.
Listen, Colin, if your cat turned into a power beast, you would not be alive. Right now.
If you could see, hold on, I need to, okay, keep talking. I just need to show you how cute he is. I'll show you later.
I've seen your adventure cat stuff. He doesn't seem much of a power beast, to be honest.
Listen, he tries his best.
So he's not a power beast. He's very cute.
I'm gonna curl up and let you finish talking.
I didn't say he wasn't cute. He just wasn't a free magic power beast that was out to kill the world, right? But what's really cool about this book is that the way the magic works is very visual. The magic works through a series of glyphs, and they're all over the place. And there are these amazing descriptions of underground areas where there are ships that are stranded and princes that are turned into rocks that have to come back to life. Like, the way that it's lacking in visual ends up being really great because the author has so much imagination and he does such a good job of describing everything. Thing that I have an incredibly clear picture in my head of what this world looks like, even though I can't see it. And that's actually something that I really like about novels. I actually grew up without TV. I didn't watch TV until I was in high school. So that was super important. Yeah, so I read a lot of books. So having that visual imagination, the ability to create a world so well with words, is something that I think that is really special and something that's amazing about this series.
And literally the opposite of Tales of Alethreon.
True.
Yeah. I mean, Bionicle had some of the weirdest limitations because, well, the limitation was that the story was not the focus of the thing. The toys were. And you had to buy the toys to learn the story. The first movie didn't come out until 2 years after the toys launched. And something I didn't mention is those six main characters each had a color.
Whoa.
You had a red, black, brown, blue, green, white... That was six. Cool.
I wasn't counting for you. I'm so sorry.
and that was kind of like what got your attention on the shelves, was the colors of them. And it wasn't just like the red is straight red. He had like red and orange and yellow and silver and stuff. And that would be like one of the things I'd be like, I want the red one. My favorite color was blue. But my sister always got the blue one, so fuck that bitch. But that was just kind of a way to lasso you into the whole thing. But what that actually broke down to on the back end was those were their elements. You had the fire guy, the water girl, the rock guy, the air guy, all that shit.
Shark Boy and Lava Girl?
Basically, Shark Boy and Lava Girl. A young Taylor Lautner disassembled in a small plastic can for $7.88 on a Walmart shelf. $7.88 plus tax.
Terrifying. That is a terrifying visual.
Bionicles are what taught me what tax are, because I was like, I have exactly $7.88. And they're like, that's not enough. Fuck you, capitalism.
It's a hard life.
Unfortunately, they didn't realize how real it was. Well, it was just interesting. I retroactively find myself fascinated at how into the story I became. Just because I was like, I want the brown one. I want Pohatu. I want the brown one. And the limitation is it was just a picture and a price tag. And like from there, if you pay, you could throw the comic and instruction booklet out and like never pay attention to it. And then they ended up making three movies that actually went like into theaters, or two of them went into the theaters. Like they weren't all straight to DVD bullshit. I think that that's one of the weirdest limitations of story, because I love looking at how people limit themselves. And this was like, what if you don't know there's a story, but there's a big story?
So with Fallout, one of the, I think, limitations to the world building and storytelling is that it's an open world game. So that does give a lot of opportunity to visually tell the story through creating different environments and the way things and people look. But as far as getting like kind of a feel for what has happened in the world and what may happen and that kind of stuff. You kind of got to go looking for that in an open world game, whereas you'll get bits and pieces of it if you just do like the main storyline. And they put like just those little bits in there so that you'll hopefully want to go off on all these different side quests and find stuff out, but you don't have to at all.
Just the bits, please.
So I'd say that's probably the main limitation of Fallout as an open world series of games. But for the kind of person that would want to seek out the full story and know everything that there is to know, it's a really big strength of it, actually, because, you know, there's like a little bit of work involved, you know.
You are one huge nerd.
I mean, similar to like Bionicle thing, where like you had to go and get the different Bionicles to find out about the different stories. Like with Fallout, you don't have to go out to a store, but like within the game world, you've got to go walk to these different locations and find different little notes and computers with text on them.
Gotta fight that giant goddamn ant.
And fight giant ants. Yeah, that's true.
Well, actually, I kind of didn't even think of this until a second ago, but I'm not repping a game. I'm representing a toy this week. There's a dichotomy just in this podcast of how these things can be built, because Eddie and I chose something interactive and Laura and Chowder are talking about something passive.
They're both like that old guard medium of like beginning to end.
And
yeah,
just when you're looking at Tales of Alethreon, it almost feels like you can piece it together in an interesting way because the timeline isn't super clear. If I had watched them in a completely different order, there is that interesting aspect where I can sort of choose my own way through it and still get the same message. But even so, it's I think that Sabriel was probably much more closely related just because, like, you know you're there for a story and you're waiting for the story to happen to you.
So that was actually the reason I wanted to bring a game as the thing I brought as my domain, was because with the Tales of Alethreon, after looking into it a little bit more, I was able to find this out through watching the character introductions. They had like a Kickstarter to like get the series going, to kickstart it. What they did was they released the character introduction videos, and on the Kickstarter, people who donated could vote like which characters' stories they wanted to have explored first. And so that kind of added like an interactive element to this non-interactive medium. Sure, I don't get to choose like what the story is, but if I had been like a Kickstarter backer, I could have been like, oh, I want to know more about, you know, Wilhelm and Vito, or more about Tatiana, so I can vote on that. And then if enough people agree with me, then they're going to make that story first. So yeah, that's why I wanted to bring a game to link those kind of interactive elements together.
I want to like expand on the limitations Tales of Alethreon goes through, because like, here's the thing about animation. I think it's one of the most freeing art forms there is, because anything you can imagine, you can bring to life through animation. The problem is, you have to bring it to life. You have to draw every frame, make every frame come to life. So the trade-off is, you can do anything you want, be prepared to put a lot of time, effort, money, manpower into it. Alethreon has to go through that limitation of being like these relatively new guys coming out of college, starting their own business and like having to take this big undertaking.
Yeah, it's a fucking commitment. Sounds a lot harder than four dipshits fucking Skype calling into their iPads and iPhones, putting it on internet and calling it entertainment.
I don't know what you mean. It took me like 10 minutes to find my headphones today. It was a hard thing. It was so much effort.
That's a lot of effort. You should be an animator.
Yeah, so I guess we'll move on to the next question, since we have just enough time for one more. Each of our stories all like entrench themselves in something in the past. Alethreon, as Laura mentions, has that sort of Greek mythological kind of feel.
It also had neon lights, so
yeah, it's got that Samurai Jack approach to it, but like, it is like something that feels like in the past, aside from some anachronisms, you know?
Yeah, it reminded me of Samurai Jack a lot.
With Eddie, it's entrenched in 1950s sci-fi kind of style. Laura, I don't know much about Sabriel, but it sounds like something that wouldn't be out of place.
She said medievalish.
Well, that was a mistake. I did a bad job of describing it.
With Bionicles.
And Bionicles are plastic, go on.
I don't know much about Bionicles, but I get the sense that there's like this sort of ancient kind of feel to it.
Matoran.
Like, despite being like bio robots, there's this ancient kind of feel to them. So
Tahunga.
Well, what do you think that is? What do you think these fantasy stories drench themselves so in the past?
I guess I would probably say it, when we're talking about world building and the concept of trying to create these giant relatable things, I think it's easier to look backwards, because as soon as we look forwards, there's no point of reference because we don't know what the future is. And if we look backwards in any sense, we've spoken about Destiny on the podcast before, which is another video game where it's set 800 years in the future, but everything is told as though it's like this lost past, almost the same way Fallout refers to like hundreds of years ago, before the war, before the bombs dropped, all this stuff. And even just the
sense of something being behind you, even if you don't want to take the time to get invested in it, it's easier to digest as just a lore. People have their own folklore in real life. We have, you know, stories of the Greek gods and, you know, Roman civilization and the Egyptians before either of those things. And that's just stuff we know how that feels. And I think it's easier to say, hey, here's this whole world if we paint it within the familiar frame of, like, this is analog to your experience, to your understanding of the past. Because we can look at the, like, what the Egyptians did in the pyramids is like, holy fuck, how did they do that? People today still believe aliens did it because it's so insane.
I mean, the things you can do with slave labor.
All the white people just froze up. Oh, Jesus.
Sad, but true.
Anyway, I was going to have a kind of similar response to Colin. I feel like with world building, there are two things that are like super important, at least to me as a intaker of built worlds. And one of them is lore, you know, like there being a past and a history and stories within the world. It makes it feel lived in and real. And the fact that there is a past makes the future seem all that more important. And the other thing, that something I thought Tales of Alethreon did super well, especially since there was no dialogue, was having like a human element in that, having these characters that make mistakes and like feel feelings. So, like, you have Alethreon, who, like, he's kind of this, like, greedy hero guy, but then he falls in love, but then he, like, misses his former glory, and he makes these mistakes, but then he tries to atone for it, and that's, like, a relatable story, and it really allows us to ground ourselves in these kind of fantastical settings. So, like, we can, it's much easier to believe all of the crazy stuff. It's a lot easier to buy into all that if at the center of the story we have people who are acting human. And I think that's something that I haven't read Sabriel, but I know applies to Fallout, and I know applies to Bionicle. Even we don't have humans in Bionicles, but they act like people. So that's kind of my piece on that.
I'm going to just really quickly try to answer also. So first I want to say that Sabriel is really interesting because the Ancelstiere is basically like 20th century England. It's much more, it is still in the past, but it's much more current. And the old world is much more like a medieval fighting with swords type of world, which is really cool. But so I think it's really important because it's so much harder to come up with a unique concept that doesn't exist and have it be understood. And I think that you can do that if you have a visual cue, but there has to be something that you relate to. And if it's something that's totally and completely foreign, it's just not gonna sell as well. Like, it's just not gonna be is interesting because it's so unrelatable if it's incredibly different. So I think there are some things that do that really well and create a world that is not really based in humanity or our history, but it's super rare to be able to do that. Like, it just has to have some grounding.
Now I am wishing I talked about Destiny, but I really hate the way Destiny built.
I don't even have the time to tell you about how I don't have the time to tell you about how I don't have the time to tell you about this crazy thing that happened.
I could tell you all about this interesting world we created.
But I fucking won't. They named a gun after that in the game. There's a gun called No Time to Explain because that line is so fucking infamous.
Thank yeah. God. It's such a bad line.
Alright, next up we have the rating portion, where each of the representatives will rate Tales of Alethreon a rating out of 5. This episode, the rating will be Penguin Things. The Penguin Things from Traveling Deities.
Penguin Thing. So, 1 out of 5 Traveling Deities?
I feel like the gods are big things to use as a rating system, but whatever.
Well, so are galaxies, or whatever we used last time.
Yeah, after each representative has rated Tales of Alethreon, I will give one of these representatives what is essentially a gold star, and that gold star will be the enlightenment that friendship was the real reward.
I don't want this fucking reward, man. I'm a crabby antisocialite.
I'll take it.
I'm up first to rate it, aren't I? Okay, let me do that. So, hi, my name's Colin. I'm joining you this week.
Hi, Colin.
Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Colin.
Hi, Laura. Fuck you, Chowder. So I am actually going to rate the tales of the guy I did not know was Alethreon probably 3 out of 5. I took some issue with some of the animation style, not the art style necessarily, but and I understand the production reasons why. That's not mainly why I'm knocking it. To be honest, probably the biggest reason I am knocking it is even though I enjoyed some of the weirdness and the variety in the world, I still don't have a great sense of what that world is. I know that it feels like, you know, you've got like these stereotypically represented, like Middle Eastern villages from the medieval ages. You've got like a rave in there. At one time, they're in a place literally with a laser light show and fucking EDM going. And I was really, really having a hard time digesting that. They show a lot of weird creatures and stuff, but they don't do a lot to tell me what they are. The thing where Elethrion killed the gods, I was lost that whole time. I was going to rate it, honestly, a bit lower, but I'm enjoying a bit more now that we've had this conversation. I honestly wasn't swept up in the world building itself. That didn't grab me. I appreciate the work that went into it. It's very well crafted and lovingly made, but that didn't really stand out to me.
I am going to rate it a 3.7.
What the fuck?
Sorry if you hate partial ratings.
I don't, but like 3.7? Okay.
Yeah, 3.7. So
that's like three traveling deities and the dead one.
God, no, now I want to read a 4. That's awful.
You can't bring it back to life. He's already gone.
I know. Fuck. All right. So I saved 3 of them. The last one's dead. I'm holding onto its sad, limp body because I just don't know how to let go. So I actually also really, I thought it was incredibly well made. And I loved the way that it looked. And I spent most of the time as I was watching it just being like, damn, this is so pretty.
I know. It was the same for me, yeah.
Which was really nice because I think that it took a lot of effort. For the imagery and for the connection that I felt to the Greek myths. So I read a lot of Greek myths when I was a kid, so I have a close connection to that. So I really felt that in these stories. So that definitely boosted it for me. The things that I didn't like as much were the laser light show. Like, that really, really threw me. I thought that it should have stayed in the past.
And it had a disco ball.
It had a disco ball and it had that music and it just felt really, yeah, it just really, it pulled me right out of the story. Like, that's, I was watching it, I was enjoying it, and then I was like, wait, what? And they didn't really go back to it either. So it's not like they created this world that had this aspect and then delved into it. It was just this weird moment where it happened and then that was kind of it. So I didn't love that. But other than that, it was absolutely beautiful. I will be watching the second half. I'm actually most of the way through it. My stupid boyfriend came in and interrupted so I couldn't watch the last like 2 minutes of it. He's not stupid. I love him. Anyway, so I'm going to finish it. And it was beautiful.
All right. Hey, I'm Eddie.
Don't steal my thing.
I'm having some trouble with my name this episode. Anyway, I'm going to rate Tales of Elethrion 4 traveling deities out of 5. So I, Tumble was like, hey, we're going to watch this web series called Tales of blah, 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 blah. And I was like, man, that sounds like some esoteric bullshit that I'm not going to enjoy. yeah, I know. So I was like, all right, I mean, I guess I'm going to watch this, you know? So I pulled up all the links. I had like 80 tabs open. And then I was like, all right, let's start this. So I start watching it. I'm like, all right, you know, this is a thing that's happening. It's kind of weird, you know? There's no, like, words being said. And then, like, a minute into it, I got, like, really drawn into, like, the story and, like, the friendship and the adventure. And I think a lot of that was to do with, like, the art style and the music also. The music's very good. So the fact that I kind of got, like, swept away with it, and I don't know if, like, maybe I'm making some connections that aren't there, or maybe I was just, like, you know, paying a little closer attention. I'm not sure. But, like, I felt like, you know, there weren't, like, a ton of gaps besides stuff that they're still going to be telling, because they clearly haven't made it all yet. I felt like I had like a really good grasp on like the world and like on the characters, and like it felt like there was more underneath the surface that would be super interesting to explore. So, you know, started out being like, and now I'm like, yo, I'm probably gonna watch this on my own free time besides just this podcast. So 4 out of 5.
Yeah, and that makes me happy. I've managed to introduce people to something that's really good, and that makes me happy. All right, so moving on, the representative who learns that friendship is the real reward is...
Hey, stop that fucking pose. Get off your fucking high horse.
Alas, it's actually Laura.
Oh!
Yeah. Yes!
I did call that earlier, since Colin and I are like...
Epic!
...being dicks this whole episode.
That's,
I mean,
true.
To be fair, Laura also like...
I think we all brought some really good points. We also took some serious, like, just, we fucked up.
She earned it. She earned the W.
Yep.
Let me take away the credit this woman has earned and supplant it with the man's fallacies.
Perfect.
All right, so I think that concludes the punk.
We played a good game out there today, Eddie.
You don't know. No. If the other person doesn't get a victory speech, you don't get a concession speech. No, eat a fucking dick. Chowder, cut this out. You know, Laura, just talk over it. Chowder, cut it out. This is a horse shit.
Not Rocky Balboa, but in fact, Rocky 1. He doesn't actually beat Apollo Creed at the end of the movie. He loses, but it's not about winning. You know, it's about going the distance. You know, having
you
the
aren't
eye
even
of the,
tiger. The host.
And I'm really proud of how I played this game today.
So thank you so much for that. I didn't really feel like I got a great opportunity to compare and contrast my rep, my domain to the thing. No, but I actually really enjoyed Tales of Alethreon. It was nice to learn something new.
That about wraps it up. Okay, again, I'm Timel Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you fucking prefer. And this week's topic was... That's my thing. I'm just going to get more and more passive-aggressive with each episode. This week's topic was Tales of Alethreon and world building. You can check out Tales of Alethreon on their YouTube page, which is also called Tales of Alethreon. You can also find the studio's website, Sun Creature Studios, suncreature.com. So our next episode will be hosted by Eddie Ryan, talking about...
thanks, Tim. We're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, specifically the themes of nostalgia. So that's going to be pretty exciting. Definitely recorded this the night of. Definitely didn't record it way later.
Be sure to read up before it airs next week on June 2nd. If any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review. It's a great way for more people to find our show, as is recommending us to friends. If you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com. Thank you, and I hope you know that the true reward is friendship.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Timul Chowdhury, joined by Colin Ketchin, Eddie Ryan, and Laura Kramer. This episode is sponsored by Rock Bottom. It goes a lot lower than you think. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Timul Chowdhury, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like the show, follow us, tell your friends, or leave us a review. We hope you tune in for the next episode, and thank you for listening to this.
Do you guys want to hear the story of how Eddie and I met and what happened?
Sure.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
Is it going to mean that I'm going to go to bed later than 10?
No, this is a super short story. This is really short.
Okay, you're good.
So,
also, I'm frozen
in
my own screen.
10th grade or 11th grade, I can't remember which. We just finished a play. It was either Fantastics or Ragtime. I don't know, but we finished the show.
It was Fantastics, and you were in
11th
grade.
So I was in 10th grade. No, Fantastics for me was 10th grade. So I was in 10th grade, and I come out from the show, and I knew Eddie's older sister, Providence. Shout out, name drop Prov. Now she's going to listen to the podcast. She has to. Woo! But
she's never listened to it, by the way. Found that out yesterday or 2 days ago.
She's heartbreaking. But she was like, hey, this is my brother, Eddie. And he was like, hi, I'm Eddie. And I shook his hand and I said, hi. And then there was silence. And then he went, did you forget your name? And I went, yep, give me a second. My name's Colin. So I have a lot of understanding
for
Eddie forgetting his, for how Eddie forgot his name this podcast. I understand.
And now we're best friends, right, Colin?
That is beautiful.
We're friends. Yeah, we're friends.
We're friends. We're friends. That's the true reward.
Right?